So, Elliot, I'm in Regina, Saskatchewan for the... Actually, I shouldn't say that. Saskatchewan is what RJ Broadhead told me to call it. So don't call it Saskatchewan, or you'll sound too much like you're from Ontario. So I watch this on television.
But I want you, by the way, to bring me home a genuine pair of Saskatchewan steel skin bindings.
Steel skin bindings?
You don't know what this is?
No.
This is Super Dave Osborne. When he used to do his sketches on Bizarre with John Byner, like he'd get tied into that giant turning wheel that was a target, and the guy would shoot arrows at him. And Mike Walton, who was the commentator, would say,
"All right, Super Dave is going to go on to that target, and he's going to be strapped with genuine Saskatchewan sealskin bindings. And it takes maybe one..."
The best deadpan in the history of television, Super Dave Osborne. No one had a deadpan better than Super Dave, clearly. You've been in Regina before, haven't you?
Many times. Well, my father's family is from Saskatchewan. His dad, my grandfather, came to Canada from what is now Belarus, and he settled in Saskatchewan in 1905, I think it was. Mm-hmm. And my grandmother was like actual Canadian. Her name was Myrtle. I don't know where she came from or what her background is. I don't know that story. I have to ask my dad. But I know my grandfather came from what's now Belarus, and my grandmother was already settled in Canada with her family. Like, she was, I think, first or second generation Canadian, and they got married, and they lived in Wilkie for a while. My grandfather was the mayor of Wilkie, and then their general store burnt down, and they moved to North Battleford, Saskatchewan, where my grandparents lived for the rest of their lives, and I believe my uncle still lives now.
Okay, so you're well acquainted with Saskatchewan then.
Yes, and I did a lot of CFL there, and I would tell you, too, that make sure that your suit matches. Because there was one time I was doing sidelines at a CFL game, and I didn't realize until I got dressed for the game that I brought a mismatching pair of, like a jacket and a pair of pants. Like, oops. The jacket was purple and the pants were blue.
Oh,
and the Rough Riders fans at Old
Let you know about
Field.
It?
Oh, yeah. they were asking if I dressed in the dark, like, you know, what's wrong with you?
Do you have a mirror in your house?
I was laughing. Like, tip of the cap, that was pretty funny.
That's awesome. Okay, well, hopefully, because Deb Bribman just puts all of our outfits together for us.
You don't have
us.
That problem.
So we don't have that issue. Deb just puts it, she's the Roger stylist, for those who don't know. Makes everyone look tasty on TV. So I just grab it off the rack, because Deb puts it all together. Here for the 100th anniversary of the MasterCard, get the branding in, MasterCard Memorial Cup, Elliot Friedman.
Yep.
Do you have a favorite Memorial Cup or a great Memorial Cup moment or story, or what does this... What does this tournament mean to you? Because this is one that I've never missed. Mm-hmm. This is one I always look forward to. I think the first one that I would have seen, probably one of those new Westminster wins. They had back-to-back in 77-78 under Ernie Punch McLean, and I don't think I've missed one tournament since. What's this one for you like?
The first one I remember, and you'll have to help me with the year, was when Dale Hawerchuk won it with the old Cornwall Royals.
It'd been 1981, I want to say.
That's the one I remember, because watching it on TV and being struck at, you know, how good they were and how good Hawerchuk was. Yeah. I was a guy who went to some junior hockey in Toronto to watch the Marlies when I was a kid. Like, when I was a kid, their heyday was over. They weren't as good as, you know, when in the Mark Howe days or the...
Early 70s.
Or the
great.
Bruce Boudreau days or anything like that. But so the first one I really remember is Dale Hawerchuk. I think the one that I remember the most was the one in the NHL lockout year of 2005, Sidney Crosby versus the loaded London Knights. And that was a tournament I remember very well.
Welcome inside what's affectionately known as the House of Green for the championship final of the 2005 MasterCard Memorial Cup. Number one versus number two in the nation, London Tangles with the Rimouski Oceanic. And Fritchie in full flight again for Shrimp into the high slot. Terrific team rebound! Scores! Brian Rodney! Rebound! Desjardins still loose! Scores! David Boland! and it's 3-0. Perry for Rod Trapp, snaps and scores! London, you've waited 40 years for this. Your team is about to win its first Memorial Cup.
Yeah, that was a stacked team. Maybe the best junior hockey team ever assembled, that 2005 London Knights squad. And you know what's interesting too, because it was a stacked London Knights team. And if you look at that Rimouski Oceanic team that that Crosby played on, I mean, he's really the only guy that made it out.
That's right. And one of his line mates was a first rounder by Edmonton, if I remember correctly.
Correct.
Pouliot. And they were undefeated in something like 30 games before that tournament.
Yeah, they were a real good
team.
And
then they ran into London.
London was just a juggernaut.
Yes.
London was a beast. Ottawa was also in that tournament as well, coming from the OHL. But yeah, that was a stacked London Knights squad. You know, this tournament to me, I think to a lot of people, and you talk to hockey players, and they'll tell you it's the hardest championship to win because your window is so small. And to win it, you know, once is an accomplishment. To win it twice is an accomplishment. And to win it twice with two different teams is an insane accomplishment, and that's what Robert Thomas is trying to do right now.
Yes.
Playing with the Hamilton Bulldogs, first-round draft pick of the St. Louis Blues. Him and Sam Steele, probably the two best players in this tournament. Oh, I'm going to hear it now of the Glenn Godden fans and the Hepanyemi fans from Swift Current, but those are probably the two best players in this tournament this time around. And, you know, Robert Thomas is probably going to be someone that I would guess, Elliot, confirm or deny, will be a St. Louis Blue next season.
I think you've got to believe that they'll give him every chance to make that team. Absolutely. Obviously, St. Louis, they're disappointed. They didn't make the playoffs. You know, Doug Armstrong's a competitive guy. They've got a lot of kids. I think you've got to believe he's going to have every chance to make that team next year.
Yeah, and, you know, the Hunters can read the tea leaves, and that's probably the reason why they traded him at deadline to Hamilton. You know, thinking like, okay, this guy's not coming back. This guy's ready for the NHL. St. Louis is going to stick him in the lineup, say trade him to Hamilton. So this year's edition of the Memorial Cup is the Hamilton Bulldogs, Regina Pats, Swift Current Broncos, Acadie Bathurst, Teton. So it's four real good teams, really all really well coached, great organizations. But interestingly enough, none of the top teams from the Western Hockey League, from the OHL or the QMJHL, are in the Memorial Cup this year.
Yeah.
Blainville-Barbriant, out, right? Sault Ste. Marie, out. And Moose Jaw Warriors, out. So none of the three top teams made it in this season.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Despite that, you look at some of their alumni. It's been a good week for Sault alumni.
Yep.
Kyle Dubas is the new general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs. We assume with Blainville-Boisbriand that Joel Bouchard is going to have a big role with the Montreal Canadiens.
Yep.
The expectation is he might be the coach and the GM of the American Hockey League team in Laval. And for Moose Jaw, I think Tim Hunter's name is starting to come up around, you know, pro hockey as a coach somewhere. You know, Troy Mann from Hershey, his brother is in the Ottawa front office. So I think a few people expect that he has a good shot at becoming Binghamton's next head coach. But right. I would think Tim Hunter would be in the running there too.
Yeah, you've mentioned that. I mean, more and more, and specifically when you get to the Memorial Cup, I mean, that really does wonders for your coaching career. You look at all the coaches from last year, for example. You know, Danny Flynn, you know, he stayed in junior hockey and ended up getting an assistant job in Portland after he left St. John. But whether it's, you know, Rocky Thompson, whether it's Steve Konowalczyk, whether it's Chris Knobloch, they all left for greener pastures.
Well, that team I remember wasn't Orval Tessier, the head coach in Cornwall, and he ended up in Chicago.
Yes.
And they went to the playoffs, and he was doing really – they were struggling, and he took them to the playoffs and until he said that what his team needed, and he said 18 heart transplants, and that was the end of that.
Great line, though.
That's an excellent line.
Spent about an hour and a half yesterday with John Paddock in the Regina Pats office yesterday just talking about the Pats. And you know, here's someone who got the NHL – yeah, real nice guy, smart coach. Regina's a really well-put-together and well-run organization, you know, heritage – franchise in the CHL, hosting the event this year. The coach that I wonder about this year is John Gruden with the Hamilton Bulldogs.
Yep.
Most people will recognize that name from the Flint Firebirds fiasco from a couple of seasons ago. Players walking out, we're not going to play if he's not the head coach. You know, there's a number of players on Hamilton from Flint from that squad that Gruden's been able to bring over. But he's put together, you know, helped put together a real nice team here. Steve Staios has done a lot of the heavy lifting. A lot of the team has been put together by way of trades, but there's also a lot of homegrown talent, the Mackenzie Entwistles and Matthew Stroms of the world. But I wonder if, you know, at the end of this tournament, you know, what John Gruden has done for himself. Are you hearing any whispers about him around pro hockey circles?
I have not, but you shouldn't take that to mean anything enormous. I think the interesting thing is right now is there's not a lot of openings.
Yeah.
And the one that to me is the most interesting is the Rangers, obviously, because it's the one at the NHL level. And they are looking for something new. You know, I've been told there would not be a surprise if it's a guy who's never coached at the NHL level before. Now, I haven't heard John's name, but that doesn't mean he wouldn't, you know, somehow be part of it. Obviously, the Rangers are waiting to talk to somebody who is still out there.
Right.
So, again, I'm not saying it's him, but he would fit their criteria. I mean, just simply in the sense that it hasn't happened yet, and we're waiting for the Rangers, and we know that they are looking for something very different.
Can I throw a name out at you?
Sure.
Sheldon Keefe.
Obviously, I don't think that that would be a huge surprise. I mean, Sheldon Keefe's name has been out there a lot. I have been led to believe that he is not the guy for the
really,
Rangers.
Eh?
Yes.
Let me throw another name at you.
Well, hold. You know what's interesting about John Gruden?
What's that?
This is just me spitballing, okay? I want to say this right away. He's a Minnesota guy, but he was a Bruins pick, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the Rangers have a big Boston mafia there.
So you think there could be a fit?
Well, I'm just saying, like, it's not out of the realm of possibility.
It's just so, I mean, you never really see it going right from junior hockey to head coach in
no,
the NHL.
It would be very different.
That is, you know, uncharted territory. I mean, you even get the eyebrow raises when someone goes from college right to the NHL, right behind the bench. Ned Harkness being the first, and that really didn't work out with the Red Wings. But, you know, you have your Dave Haxtalls and now Montgomery's in Dallas. So it's becoming more of a thing in the NHL. But going from junior hockey right to the main bench in the NHL, that's a leap.
I don't know. We're spitballing here. Like, we're just shooting the breeze. But you mentioned Keefe. Keefe's the name I hear a lot. But I've been told that it's probably not him. Because he's the first guy that jumped out of my head. They must be waiting to talk to Keefe, who's got the Marlies in the Calder Cup semifinal. But guys tell me that they don't think that's it.
Really, eh?
Yeah. Like, I was wondering if it was maybe like a Lane Lambert. You know,
right.
Lane Lambert's been close to getting a couple of jobs. He was up in Colorado when Bednar got the job. And again, I'm told that, you know, that may not be it. I wonder if it was a guy like Pascal Vincent, who's done a really good job with
Manitoba,
getting players from Manitoba ready to Winnipeg. I've been told he's probably not it. Like, I'm going down the list, so I'm curious about it.
I was going to say, so who's it then, if you're going down the list and checking them off?
I don't know.
Yeah, so MasterCard Memorial Cup, everything gets underway on Friday.
Who are you picking?
This is a tough one because there's no
gambling
is now legal
in American states, so they're banking on this pick.
And that will come up a little bit later on in the 31 Thoughts podcast here. My head says Hamilton. You know what my heart says, though?
What?
Swift Current Broncos. Saskatchewan team had their own bus tragedy as well. You know, a real strong squad, real strong team, probably had the toughest, you know, the toughest route to the Memorial Cup. I mean, they beat Moose Jaw. They beat Regina. Like, they, you know, beat Carter Hart and the Everett Silvertips. Like,
yep.
Lost a pair of games against a really underrated Lethbridge squad. Like, that's a real good team. My heart wants Swift Current just because of the Saskatchewan Broncos, bus tragedy association. I just think it would be a wonderful story for everybody involved. But Hamilton's good, man. Hamilton, you know, everyone is always, you know, boffo about the Western Conference and the OHL, and for good reason. It's always loaded up, and that's where, you know, the heavyweights come from, and the East has been picked on the last few years. But this Hamilton team is good. They're a straight-line team. They're a hardworking team. I think they have the oldest defense probably in the entire CHL. No one's flashy, but everyone really works hard. Like, this is a really hardworking team. This embodies that sort of spirit of the city of Hamilton.
Mm-hmm.
That's what this team is. And, you know, they also have, you know, wonderful skill. And, you know, I want to say one thing about Matthew Strome, too. So the Philadelphia Flyers pick, of course, his brother's playing in the NHL.
Yep.
You know, he's always had the knocks of, oh, he can't get around the ice, oh, his skating's going to hold him back and all this. This guy wins everywhere he goes. You know, in the first OHL Cup that I did for Sportsnet, he scores a double overtime winner for the Toronto Marlies, and they beat the Don Mills Flyers. He's a winner at that level. In the OHL with the Hamilton Bulldogs, he's a winner. They win the J. Ross Robertson Cup, might win the Memorial Cup. You know, there are just those guys, Elliot, that play key roles on winning teams. And for all the detractors of Matthew Strome, you know those guys that just win no matter where they go?
Mm-hmm.
That seems to be Matthew Strome. Because everywhere he's gone, it's win, win, win with Matt Strome.
Very Chris Drury.
Chris Drury, yes. Yeah, wherever you go, there's W's beside the name.
And we should mention that Swift Current's head coach is Manny Viveros.
It's true.
Who also, I think, is up for a few NHL assistant jobs. I don't think it'll be Calgary. I heard Calgary. I'm hearing it may not be there, but I think Edmonton was interested. And I don't know if Vancouver is going to have an opening, but you know, he's got connections there too. So I wouldn't be surprised if he's being looked at somewhere.
All right. So we'll stay tuned to find out the answer to that and other questions that the 100th anniversary of the Memorial Cup will answer. And with that, we welcome you to 31 Thoughts Podcast, brought to you by the all-new 2018 GMC Terrain.
The best part of the 31 Thoughts podcast is that Elliot can't be late. The most uttered phrases on Wednesday is, where's Elliot and has anyone seen Frege? If you want to get Jeff Merrick going, there's nothing more that Jeff Merrick loves than a straight mouth emoji. Hey Jeffy, a good old dog face to start your day.
Okay.
What's so, that story?
Dog face. For whatever reason, I really found a home. With me, and that's Matt Marstrom, by the way, one of the producers of Sportsnet, Hot Hockey Central, and Brandy Cumming, who works in the control room. We have this thing on group text where we just send each other's pictures of resting dog face. You know when your dog just has that look on his or her face where it's just expressionless?
Mm-hmm.
For whatever reason, it found a home with us. We just love that visual. And whenever Marzi's dog, or Marzi can capture the dog doing dog face, send it to group text, ditto for Brandy if she ever sees dog face, sends it to us. And when we still had Deke, our husky, whenever he was doing dog face, I'd always send that around to them too. So it's stupid, it's goofy, it's silly. But
we all
yeah,
have stupid dog, habits.
Dude, and for me and Marzi and Brandy, it's dog face. And to us, it's endlessly hilarious. And that's the story. There's not much to it. It's just we love dogs with expressionless faces.
Everybody loves emojis, right?
Yeah. Yeah, we sure
I'm trying
do.
To find
you know
out. I'm trying to find out which GMs use emojis when they text each other.
We had a tweet about that.
I can't imagine Iserman does it.
Nope.
I can't see Bob Murray doing it.
Nope. Can you see Mark Bergevin doing it?
A thumbs up.
Yes.
A thumbs up.
There's one agent that I talk to on a regular basis who's in love with emojis. Like I'll get full texts that are just emojis, and I have to like, oh man, I got to put on my decoder ring here to try to figure out what he's telling me.
I have a couple guys, but like I'm a thumbs up guy. I'll use thumbs up so people know a conversation is over.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, I use the crying laughing emoji a couple of times.
Yeah, I'm a thumbs up guy.
But that's it.
Pretty big gift guy.
Yeah, Emil's showing me like a watch because I'm always late.
Yeah, what's the story there, Frege?
I don't know.
My dog face story. What's your story about being late?
I don't know why it happens.
The broken watch.
Because
broken clock.
I've got the attention span of a housefly. That's
yes,
why.
We've established that. Hey, you know what? Have you seen the, I retweeted a couple of days ago, the video of that boxer doing the Fortnite dance? The take the L dance after
no.
He knocks down another boxer. Do you know much about Fortnite?
Well, I know what it is.
Okay, so you're familiar with it.
Yes.
I think our kids are starting to get into it now. Okay. They're a little bit young for it, I think.
My son's six. Like, he's not getting into that yet.
Yeah, I have a six-year-old and an eight-year-old.
Oh,
and
okay,
they're
there
both
you go.
Starting. But they love the dances. Like, this weekend, Frege, I spent a good part of my weekend trying to teach them. I can't believe that I could even actually do it. Try to do what's called the floss dance from Fortnite. And I'll tell you, all the junior hockey kids at the gym, it's all they talk about.
Really?
It's all they talk about is playing for, like, they'll play for hours and hours and hours and hours on end.
Well, I know a lot of the NHL players do. And there was, in Winnipeg, there was a sign on the street out on Donald. There was a fan holding up a sign referring to PK Subban by, like, a nickname, somebody who hides in the bush in Fortnite.
Okay.
And apparently that's a strategy that is frowned upon. That
oh.
if you do that, the other players hate you for it. It's like one of those weaselly strategies. And somebody held up a sign. I was like, it says PK is, it was something. And I was like, what is that? Like, do we know what that is? And Brad, who does our tellies.
Yeah, Brad, yeah.
He texted me and said, that is an insult. If you do that in Fortnite, you're basically a cheater.
Okay, you know what my plan is for the summer?
What's that?
Is to learn how to play Fortnite.
Well, there you go.
Going to buy an Xbox when the draft is done, free agency's done. I'm buying an Xbox for the kids, and I'm learning how to play Fortnite so I can play with the kids.
Well, if
I'm worried.
It's a great idea. We don't want to get our kid addicted to video games yet. He's an iPad kid.
Yeah.
He likes Tetris.
Yeah.
And he likes, I don't know, like these games where you, like, what's it called? Fruit Jam or something like that. He likes that stuff. I'm not ready for I don't care, but my wife is not ready for the killing games yet.
Yeah, we're hot and cold on the whole thing, but we just kind of think it's inevitable.
It is.
So that's my big summer project, is to get relatively decent at Fortnite.
Boy, it's going
to
be a cool summer at the Merrick House.
It's going to be a lot of fun. Thankfully, our kids are really active. Like, TJ's playing rep baseball. He's got AAA hockey. Brody's doing lacrosse and baseball. And, like, they're busy. Like, they're iPad kids, too. But they'll be on their iPads for, like, 20 minutes. And they'll be like, okay, Dad, I want to go play on the trampoline. Or, Dad, I want to go throw the ball around. I want to go take shots, get the shooting pad out. So, really happy about that.
Good.
On video games, and I'm not going to say the player's name, I really doubt he's going to make it to the NHL, and it's because of a video game addiction. To the point where his general manager told me, junior general manager told me, that they've had him go to counseling over it, because he'll play till all hours of the night and into the morning, and then he'll have no energy like the next day. Like, he'll be a write-off.
Wow.
And it is that bad. He is just, like, he has this compulsion for playing video games.
That's a heck of a story.
Till all hours. I swore upon
I wouldn't
say the player's name. But it's unfortunate. I mean, he's a recent first-round draft pick to a very, very prominent NHL team who will probably never play in the NHL because of a video game addiction.
You know, one thing I do know is I know that there are teams who will say, after a certain point of the season, we don't want those things on the road and
right.
stuff like that. Like, it's like sort of like MLB teams and golf clubs. Was there a point in the season where you told your players, okay, no more golf clubs on the road? And I do know of teams that have done that.
Yeah.
But why, like, an addiction being the reason they haven't made the
yeah.
NHL?
Yeah.
Well, that'll be a heck of
it's
a story
bad.
When somebody tries to do it.
Yeah, if he and hopefully, and again, this is like information that's 6 months old, maybe even actually it's like a year old now, but it's a terrible story because this guy's a good junior hockey player. Like, this guy's a good player and was a high pick. And I'm probably even saying too much right there, but there's a good chance he's not going to make it to the NHL. And his general manager said, like, yeah, video game addiction, it's bad. It's bad with this kid.
Well, if I'm distracted and I'm not paying attention to you, it's because I'm looking through the draft, recent draft history. I'm going to start throwing names at you.
Don't do it.
No,
I'm not even going to answer.
I'm not even going
to
do that.
Not even going to answer it. All right. Hey, you referenced Kyle Dubas a couple of seconds ago
yep.
and the Toronto Maple Leafs. And since the last podcast.
It gives me great pride to announce today Kyle as the new general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs.
He's the new general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs. He's Kyle Dubas, and he joins us in studio. Good to see you, and congratulations on the new gig.
Thank you, Bob.
So you're young.
I'm happy for him. I think it's an incredible accomplishment to have a 32-year-old person be the GM of the Maple Leafs, the second youngest in franchise history, and now the second youngest GM in the NHL ahead of only John Chayka from Arizona. You know, I am very, very happy for Kyle. I think he earned it. I think he worked at it. And that's my way. Like, everything that came out of that was exactly as I expected. People who reacted a certain way were exactly the people I thought were going to react one way. And the people who reacted the other way were exactly the people who I thought were going to react the other way. Mm-hmm. My genuine curiosity is going to be, you know, where do we go from here? How does this work? Who does he bring in? How does he run the team? You know, what kinds of things is he going to do that are going to be different? Because I know he thinks differently. How can you really think differently in hockey? That's what I'm curious about, Jeff. Like, I have people who say to me all the time, we need new ideas. We need fresh ways of thinking. We need a different opinion on how to do things. And then nobody knows how to get from A to B to C. I'm curious to see, is he going to be able to do that? Because he is going to have the resources of one of the sport's wealthiest organizations to do it. Mm-hmm. So if he can't do it, then who is?
When the Florida Panthers, you know, previous to reestablishing Dale Talon as a general manager, you know, went through their, you know, big analytics revolution, it almost as it was if that became an audit on analytics.
Yes.
And that became a test case for does it work or not. Do you get the feeling the same is going to be said about the Maple Leafs with Kyle Dubas in charge?
Yes, I do think so, because the one thing the Panthers didn't have was they didn't have the ability to really see it through. You know, the Panthers don't have the resources. One of the reasons that that didn't last was because it was too big a risk for a team that can't take a lot of risks. Mm-hmm. So that's number one. Number two, and like the last time I called them the Computer Boys, somebody tweeted at me and said, how come they get a nasty nickname? Like, I don't use this a nasty nickname. I think it's funny, actually. You know, I had a couple minutes to chat with Eric Joyce at the draft lottery this year because I wanted to see how he was doing. And, you know, he seems to be in a really good spot. I don't think the issue there was a lot of their moves. I think the issue was the way some things were handled. Like, if you look at a lot of the contracts they signed players to, those were good contracts. Like, Barkov's contract is a great contract. Huberto's contract is a great contract. Steve Wurrier, before my draft, my NHL draft a year ago, my pool draft, he texted me and he said, you have to draft Jonathan Marchessault. And I'm like, okay, why? He says, I am telling you, Jonathan Marchessault is going to be the big steal of the year. And I didn't do it because I ran out of money and somebody outbid me for him. Hmm. But those were the things they did right. They were good at identifying Mark Pesek. Gerard Gallant told me that when they first traded for Mark Pesek, they were like, what on earth? And then they saw him play and they were like, I see it. I get it. And so they were really good at signing contracts, and they were like any other GM. They were good at identifying some real hidden gems. They had some misses. They had some makes. But, you know, they did a really good job at identifying some guys. Where that failed, I really believe, was on relationships. Firing the trainers. Firing the people behind the scenes. Because people lost trust in them. Even the players. Some other people in the organization. I think that Florida was surprised by the reaction. And I think when you go out into public and you get hammered like that, when you're not used to it, it's a lot. I think Toronto will be able to handle all of those things. That is the advantage I think that Dubas in Toronto has if they want to try different things than Eric Joyce and those guys in Florida. It's that they made mistakes relationship-wise, and they didn't have the staying power to go through the turbulence. That was the difference. Toronto will have that.
I want to just detour quickly on Eric Joyce for a second here. Get back to Kyle Dubas.
And you know what? Leafs. The Gallant thing. That one
that was bad.
That was bad. And
that was bad.
And the way they handled that, and they were right about Marchessault, and Dale Talon's getting killed for his draft for leaving, letting them go. And, you know, it's true. It didn't work out. I think two things happened. I think they had to cut money, and they really didn't like Riley Smith last year. And those were the two decisions they made. But you know what? Dale would have kept Gallant. So I always look at it like every move you make, most GMs, you have your makes, you have your misses. Those guys, Joyce and Weirier in Florida, if they were with an organization that had more staying power and maybe they hadn't blown some of those behind-the-scenes people out earlier, I think they would have gotten a longer leash.
Once upon a time, Eric Joyce was very much being groomed to take over the general manager position one day with the Florida Panthers. Is that still true?
I would think right now it's more likely it's going to be Chris Pronger if he wants to do it. Like a lot of the former players, you have a choice. Do you really want to throw yourself into it? Steve Yzerman has thrown himself into it. He's doing it. You know, Chris Drury, I think he has a chance to be a GM, and I think he's a guy who's throwing himself into it. Jason Botterill is a guy who threw himself into it. But, you know, the thing is, do you want to throw yourself into it? I think Pronger has a chance. You know, I haven't spoken to him in a while, but I think the biggest question was going to be, does he want to throw himself into it to that level? If not, I think Joyce would be in the mix. The other guy in that organization who I'm curious to see, a former player if we'd ever want to be a GM, is Brian McCabe. I've heard really good things about McCabe and what he does in that organization.
People like him.
They do.
They like McCabe a lot, and with good reason. He's done some really good things for the Florida Panthers. I'm always curious about the survivors when there's, you know, a mass exodus of personnel, either, you know, by their decision or by firing, and he stays. Like when they were gutting guys, you know, when the axe was swinging, Brian didn't have to duck. His old team, the Toronto Maple Leafs, back to them. So with Kyle Dubasin as general manager, the two questions are this. How does he coexist with Mark Hunter? Does he coexist with Mark Hunter? And what's the relationship or the dynamic now between the general manager and the head coach?
I think a lot of people are expecting Hunter to leave. I'm one of the people who believes it's more likely than not that Lou Lamoriello is going to the Islanders. And I got to think if you're the Islanders, and I think Lamoriello would recognize this too, that he would need a Mark Hunter.
Right.
I don't know if he wants to work there. I don't know. I'm talking about Hunter. I don't know if he wants to work there. But if I'm Lou Lamoriello and I know that Hunter's not going to be happy not getting the job, I'm trying to take him with me. I think that that's the most likely thing. You know, Dubas and Ron Francis are really tight. I've had some people tell me they're really not sure that Francis wants to work next year.
Right.
I think Kyle would have no problem finding guys who want to work in Toronto. I don't think that's ever, especially, look, it's a team on the upswing. You know, I made the point, Jeff, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, no general manager in the entire history of the Maple Leafs has been handed a team in a better position than Kyle Dubas has when they got the job.
No, this is the team that's starting to get up to the, I mean, if it's a clock, they're at minute, what, 45 of their winning cycle?
You know, John Ferguson had a team that was in the playoffs, but you saw the cracks starting to come. But if you look at it, Fletcher had a team that was down.
Yeah.
You know, Burke had a team that was down. Nonis had a team that wasn't like this. Pat Quinn had a team that was down. Dryden had a team that was down. You know, Jim Gregory had a team in 1969 that, you know, just had been murdered in the playoffs and was transitioning from the team that won the Stanley Cup to whatever. I mean, you go through their history, there's never been a GM who's had a team on the rise when they got the job like he does. So I think he'll have no problem trying to find people who want to work there. Now, I know you have a theory on some of his Sioux guys who might end up there.
It wouldn't surprise me if Mark Hunter leaves that we see Wes Clark, you mentioned Florida Panthers. Wouldn't it surprise me to see Wes Clark come aboard?
Mm-hmm.
And again, I'm basing this on, just like you're saying earlier, just spitballing.
Yeah.
Vic Carnero.
Who got a shutout at the press conference.
Yes, that wouldn't surprise me either. But Wes Clark would be the big one for me. If Mark Hunter's out, I wouldn't be surprised at all if they end up going. I mean, he was with the Leafs organization for a while too, so it wouldn't surprise me if Wes Clark comes back to the Toronto Maple Leafs mix. What about Dubas and Babcock?
You know, that's going to be an interesting one. Babcock is not very happy with us at Sportsnet right now. He's overseas, and he's made it very clear. And he's talking about how there's nothing to worry about in some of the relationships with his players. The one thing I was told is that Dubas will be no shrinking violet. I think it behooves these guys to get along. Like, you know, the pressure's on them now. You know, 2 years ago they got Matthews, they made the playoffs, and everybody was excited. Yay, we made the playoffs in Toronto. Last year, it was exciting. They were in the playoffs from January on. They lost the first round. Now it's like, okay, we're expecting something more. These guys need to get along. One of the guys I spoke to who kind of knows Dubas best said that he will be, I don't know if anxious is the right word, but he won't be afraid to prove that he won't be stepped on. And, you know, when I hear that, it's like, okay, are you looking to prove it, or are you just going to say, look, if it happens, I'm going to say, no, that's not the way we're going to do things. I think the ultimate power still rests with Shanahan, but I do believe that Dubas will be unafraid to show that he's not afraid. And I think those guys will have to get along because the stakes are high now.
Normally when a general manager comes in, rightly or wrongly, they want to put their stamp right away on the organization.
Yep.
So you see Dubas coming in and going big game hunting right away?
I think whatever he decides to do, he will go into it big. If he says, I want that guy, he's going to put the full court press on that guy. It's funny. Ron asked him on the day he was hired about books he's read, and Kyle apparently is a very good reader. Mm-hmm. And reads a lot of very different stuff. And one of the books he said was The Score Takes Care of Itself, which is a book that also Alex Anthopoulos has quoted as saying was one that had a huge effect on him. It's a book by Bill Walsh, the late great football coach. And from what I understand, Dubas is similar to Anthopoulos in the sense that once they get their idea on something, they're at it like a pit bull on a bone. Mm-hmm. Like if you've heard other GMs talk about Anthopoulos, it's that when he decided he wanted Josh Donaldson from the A's, or he decided he wanted David Price or Troy Tulowitzki, those other GMs all said he was, I'm not letting go of you until I get these guys. He was relentless. And I have heard that he's the same way, that Dubas is the same way, that, you know, if he goes big game hunting, he's going to do what it takes to get it done. That's what I've heard, that he will, if he identifies something that he wants, he'll go out of his way to make sure he gets it.
Any names jump out at you right away?
You know, right now, no. I think it's still early. I think people are still trying to get a feel of what they're after. I think after the Worlds, when some of my guys come back from overseas, I'm going to have a better idea.
Gotcha.
The one thing someone did tell me, I know it's not as sexy as everybody listening to this podcast would like to hear, is that they believe that he'll be very good about giving chances to Marlies who are ready.
Oh, that wouldn't surprise me at all. I think you can see, like, you know, a spot waiting for someone like Carl Grundstrom.
Yes, like those guys. And, you know, like Janssen, although he was pretty close to being an NHLer already.
Yep.
He's a big Kasperi Kapanen guy. When he was making the deal with Pittsburgh for Kessel, he fought for Pouliot, didn't get him. He fought for Matt Murray, didn't get him. He fought for Kapanen, and Pittsburgh was willing to do it because they were down on Kapanen at the time. But he was a big believer. But I've been told, like, those Marlies guys who were close, he'll be inclined to give them a chance.
Interesting times ahead. We'll take a break. We should have mentioned this earlier. Martin St. Louis Elliott will drop by the 31 Thoughts podcast next.
The all-new 2018 GMC Terrain is the compact SUV thoughtfully designed with you in mind. With features like the Traction Select system to revolutionize how you adapt to the road, a fold flat front passenger seat to give you up to 8 feet of cargo space, and an innovative electronic precision shift system to make shifting easier than ever, the 2018 GMC Terrain is truly mighty like a pro. GMC, we are professional grade.
And I apologize for repeating, but for those who are joining, and just because it's that important, the next goal could win the Stanley Cup if it's scored by Calgary. A game seven if it is scored by Tampa Bay. That's what's up for grabs. Second overtime is underway. Zadorov coming back. Got it up to the point. St. Louis puts the hit off. Leopold in the corner got it out of there. Moved it up the wall. Cullimore went down. Taylor the shot. Redirected. Score! Game seven! Martin St. Louis! We are going back to Tampa Bay! 33 seconds into the double overtime!
His first shot of the game. Gets the rebound. Put it up top.
The great speed. Well, that line, he's just been a really strong player.
Well, LaDonna had a point man on the far side. Instead of St. Louis, cuts it, shoots, scores! 30, St. Louis! A shorthanded goal on the Lightning lead.
I need to make something perfectly clear. Perfectly clear. And I want his kids to know this, too. Marty was a pain in the ass to coach. He was stubborn. He was convicted. He had questions upon questions. Mo, you were his roommate, hey? Question upon question about trying to find a better way to do it. Find a better way to beat that team, to beat that opponent, that player.
Elliot, pleased to be joined now by Martin St. Louis, former NHLer, former Stanley Cup champion as well. Got to throw that into the mix. And pound for pound, one of the best players to come through in this or any other hockey generation. He was just that good. Marty, first of all, thanks so much for doing this. And how are you today, sir?
I'm great, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Interesting comments on Twitter last night about playing on the road. What did you like about playing on the road specifically?
You know, like, I felt like the more and more as I played, you know, there was so much more emphasis on, you know, matchup and this and that and last change. And I know they're a big part of the game. I just felt as a, you know, as a guy who was throughout my career, I wasn't always a top guy, but at the time when I became a top guy, I was a top guy for a while, I always find myself having more fun playing on the road. Because I knew that I would jump over the board more. We weren't going to wait to see who they put on the ice and then what matchup he wants. And I think my coaches knew I was in good shape and I could play a lot of minutes, especially with Torts. He wasn't afraid of double shifting us. You know, I think it was kind of a given back to us a little bit with his hard training camp where we were such in good shape that, you know, on the road, I felt a lot of time. I mean, Torch would double shift us at home, too. I mean, Torch did some matching, but not overly. Now, he probably does more matching now than he did back then, like the rest of the league. But I always found that on the road, I would just be out there more often. Maybe the amount of ice time was probably similar, but maybe the amount of shifts were more on the road. Maybe I took shorter shifts just to be able to sustain getting double shifted more on the road. And it would really mess up the other line, the other team, if they were trying to match, especially when we were playing against a line who was maybe a check-in line. So now they have their top guys on the bench more, you know. So, and that's annoying. I want to go against the top guys. I want to go, like, you know, the top against the top. I used to like that. Like, I think it was a challenge to play well away from the puck, playing an honest game, still finding your spots to anticipate plays. You know, I call anticipating because, I mean, I've definitely cheated sometime in my career, but for me, I always felt I was trying to, you know, wage the risk and reward. So they were calculated risk in my game where, you know, if the play didn't pan out, we didn't get hurt too bad by it because we had numbers, you know, and that was definitely part of my, you know, how I was reading the game. as a top guy, you have to anticipate plays, almost cheating, but not cheating. You know, it's that anticipation and trusting guys can make play to you, and understanding the risk and reward and when to do it. You know, obviously you got to play the time on the clock, the score of the game. You know, that's got to be part of the equation in your head as you're evaluating your risk and reward. I was taking way more risk if we were down in the third period than if, you know, we were up. But the whole, like, playing on the road to me was almost more fun. I felt more free as a player because I was going to get out there more. And if that meant keeping some of their offensive guys on the other bench, on the bench. I mean, I think it was a plus for our team.
Martin, it's interesting to hear you talk about all this stuff because there's a rumor going around that you're going to coach someday. Is that true?
Well, that rumor is true because I've been coaching since I retired.
No. I mean, like, you want to coach pros.
I mean, I'm definitely interested. I think there'll be a time and a place for that. Hopefully, it won't be too late for me. But right now, it would take a lot for me to leave my kids.
Right.
Know? So I'm enjoying seeing their development and just being part of their everyday life. Like, as I'm talking to you, I'm picking up my oldest boy who's a freshman in high school and taking him to a workout. You know, so I'm like coach, dad, driver, trainer. I wear many hats right now, but I do. Listen, I love hockey. I've always loved it. Even like my last like 5, 6, 7 years, you know, I played, but I felt like I tried to help the young guys, not so much being a coach to them, but like, you know, really talking hockey and talk about certain situation and why think a certain way and, you know, try to help them with their reads and what to look for and that kind of stuff. I enjoy that. I enjoy that part of the game. I think I see myself as a guy more in the trenches than, you know, a guy on top, but I know I'm going to be around hockey at some point. In what capacity, I'm not sure yet. You know, and right now I think my kids are the priority.
So you coach youth hockey. We know that. How do you coach youth hockey? Do you line match? I'm guessing no, considering the answer to the first question. But what goes into, you know, Martin St. Louis, the coach? Like, how do you coach the kids?
Bet my top guys like to play on the road, too. No, I mean, obviously, at the young age, you're just rolling, you know. Listen, I have a – so this year, we just finished our season. I had a second-year Bantam, a second-year Pee-wee, and a first-year Squirt. Okay, so they're all at different time in their young career, I guess, you know, where it's – you can't coach the same. It's different, you know. How are you going to coach a 14-year-old compared to a 10-year-old is very different. The approach is different. It's a lot more relaxed with the 10-year-olds. It's all, you know, about, you know, building a passion for the game for them. And it's not so much, you know, holding them accountable for every little thing, you know, which I don't do with the Bantams either. But, you know, it comes to a certain point where the accountability has to set in a little bit. And you got to learn to play with four other guys and on the ice. And we try to game plan a little bit. And, to me, it's not so much a system. It's more of a, I find, like, concepts. This is how we want to play, whatever, offensively, defensively, whatever. And then they just got to try to find a way to incorporate their game and the concept we're trying to play with. There's definitely a mature approach that I'm trying to bring to help them get to maybe the next level, whether it's high school, prep school, the D1 college, D3, whatever. And I feel I put them in a situation to keep developing, not just trying to win every game.
You know what, that sounds great, Martin, because Jeff and I'm sure we know, whether it's our kids or other people's kids, nephews, nieces, you know, 7, 8, 9 years old now, you already got a system. And I'm like, that sounds awful. So I'm glad to hear that as a guy who made it, and you made it the hard way. You weren't a guy who was going to make it as a first rounder. You made it the hard way. You see another way to teach. I like that.
Trust me, I make plenty of mistakes, and, you know, I feel at my beginning of the season meeting with the parents is always, I'm going to coach like I parent, and if you don't like my parenting skill, you won't like me as a coach. I think I'm demanding but fair, and I'm not there to to ridicule anybody. We're all going to make mistakes, and they should be making mistakes. And it's not like I didn't invent hockey, you know. Like, I'm not, like, trying to – I don't have all the answers. I make plenty of mistakes. Like, as a parent, so you make mistakes. There's plenty of time you sit in bed and be like, oh, yeah, was I too hard? Was I not – you know, you second-guess yourself all the time. But, you know, I think if you have – if you're sitting in bed and thinking of how you did a few things, it's because you care about it and you're trying to get better, whether it's a parent or a coach. And you learn along the way. And it's kind of nice with my younger two boys because I feel like I've learned a lot from my oldest one, where I feel I have a better path and game plan in terms of how to approach, you know, the next group that are 2 years younger and so on and so forth with my young one who's 10. But there's things that you try that don't work and you learn from it and you take a different approach.
You know, Martin Elliott mentioned a second ago you got there the hard way. I mean, you earned every inch of ice that you had your entire career. And it was tough getting there, as you well know. Senators camp, you know, invited for a tryout, cut. The Calgary Flames situation, cut there eventually, not taken in the expansion draft in 2000. Was there ever a point, Martin, that you were close to saying, you know what, I don't think this is going to happen for me. I'm thinking about quitting.
No, I mean, I never thought about quitting. I just wasn't sure if the NHL was going to be the league that I was going to play in. There's definitely time that crossed my mind that I might be heading to Europe. I signed 2 years in Tampa. I felt like if those 2 years don't pan out, I'm probably going to Europe after that. That was just a realistic, if I can play for Tampa, who was kind of at the bottom of the league at that point, I mean, that was probably my last lifeline, I guess, you know, and I didn't have many lifeline, obviously, coming the way I did. You know, I'm glad it worked out, but in terms of quitting, no, I mean, that never crossed my mind.
So here's my question to you. Which of your former coaches are you most like?
Former coaches. I'm probably a mix of them all, you know. All my coaches, they brought something to the table. I mean, I think Torts had the most impact on me, obviously. I like playing for Torts. But I watch Torts now. I mean, he's intense, but he's more under control, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I think he's learned in the NHL a little bit, and I'm glad to see him being successful. I mean, I love playing for Torts. The Torts that I experienced, I don't think I can coach like that at the youth hockey level. You know?
Uh-huh.
But I'm not trying to be anybody. I'm trying to be myself. I've learned from great people. I definitely take stuff from them and trying to add it to my coaching style, I guess.
Martin, what do you think people get wrong about John Tortorella? How is he misunderstood, if he is misunderstood?
How is he misunderstood? I don't think he's misunderstood. I think Torts is an emotional guy. And when you throw a microphone in his face after the game, I think it comes across, you know, as, you know, you can see like his emotional side that he actually needs and makes him. But in the media, sometimes it comes across, you know, not the best way all the time, but I think the media knows that and they like that. And, you know, they know people are going to be watching Tortorella after, you know, certain games, and especially the media knows when to put the microphone in his face. If there was an hour remove, Torts would be completely different, you know? Like, off the ice, like, in the summer, whenever, off-season, Tortorella, I mean, he's the nicest guy. And not that he's not nice as a coach. He's demanding, and I have no problem with that. He's not just going to tell you all the time that you're good, you're great, and, you know, he's going to tell you exactly how it is. And that's the only way you get to progress as a individual. It's, you know, and the people that don't like that are the people that don't, they're not really honest with themselves. And, you know, they probably haven't been told too often that they need to get better at certain things. So I like the honest approach with Torts. I knew exactly what you stood with him, and you knew what you needed to do to get more from him. If you wanted more ice time or you want to get in the lineup, whatever it was. And Torts' door was always open. I mean, I'm a coach that didn't talk much, you know, so you're always a guessing game. What do I have to do, you know? Of course, you know where you stand. And so the emotion sometimes gets the best of them, but you always knew you cared.
Last one for me. Who's your Stanley Cup champion this year? Got four teams left. Who are you picking and why?
I mean, obviously I'm picking Tampa just because I've, you know, Tampa's my favorite team, but I think any of those four teams can win. I really do.
That's a great answer. Martin, you got a young man to get to his workout. We'll let you get to it. Thanks so much for stopping by. Best of luck the rest of the way with the kids' hockey.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
You know, Elliot, as much as Sidney Crosby has a work ethic standard that everybody on the Pittsburgh Penguins is embarrassed not to follow, like Crosby sets a work rate that's so high on that Penguin squad that you have, and he's the top guy, that you have to try to keep up, or else you just get embarrassed. Martin St. Louis right there with them. Like, I would say about Marty, you know, the only one that can rival Crosby's work ethic when he was in the NHL is probably Marty St. Louis. And look no further than his quads, which are just ridiculous.
You know, I was going to say, this is a sentence that will go on my tombstone, but I've never seen anything like those thighs. It's
yeah.
True. It's totally true. And, you know, it's interesting. You know, he talked about playing and how much he wanted to play. He was a guy, I know, he went to the score sheet. He would check his minutes. How much did I play?
Yeah.
And if he didn't like the number, people knew about it.
Hmm.
And that's why I'm not surprised to hear when he tweeted that I think the road record is better because they don't worry about matchups and you just play. I'm not surprised at all. He would be the kind of guy who would love that.
Yeah, I talked to one of his ex-teammates this morning.
Was that Colby Armstrong?
This was Colby Armstrong. You outed him. we're together here in
Regina. That's right.
So good catch. And Colby said, he's like, listen, everybody loves hockey, get that. But there's some top guys, Shifley's like this, that are just all about it, like everything. And he said, you know, we'd be on the road at the World Championships, and he'd be the guy that, you know, after a game or after a workout or whatever, it was right back to the hotel or to the convention room, and he would just sit there and watch hockey games from back home. He's not going to bed until all the hockey games are done. Like, that was...
That's like us.
The all-in guy. I know, but that's our job,
yes.
Right? There's a lot of guys like, okay, I'm out of the playoffs, I'm not going to watch anymore. But he is that... He is that all-in guy, and you're right about, you know, getting there the hard way. Never drafted, you know, had a bunch of hurdles always placed in front of him, and not only did he jump over them, but he became, you know, one of the greatest players of his generation. I loved watching St. Louis play, and I always loved his interviews, too. I remember there was one specifically in the playoffs. I think it was the first period of a game, second period, and he got high-sticked across the face, and he's doing his press scrum afterwards. And one of the reporters is asking about the high stick and should there have been a penalty or suspension and all that. And he's like, no, stop. This is hockey. Like, this is going to happen. I don't want to talk about suspensions and penalties. This happens. I need to play hard. If I'm going to play hard, this kind of stuff is going to happen to me. I love that. And I always love the interviews of Marty St. Louis.
I agree. He was a great interview. Great interview.
He was. And on that, we'll pause, step away when we come back. Some Ask 31 and an update on Take the Lick.
Tired of subscribing to multiple streaming services to get your sports fix? Introducing Sportsnet Now. Live stream the entire Stanley Cup playoffs, the Blue Jays, Raptors, and NBA, Premier League, MasterCard, Memorial Cup, and much, much more, all in one subscription. You can stream on the go or at home on your big screen from the most popular devices, including smartphones, tablets, Apple TV, Xbox, and Chromecast. Sign up for as long as you want and cancel whenever you'd like. Get the best bang for your buck with the sports streaming subscription that gets you the most content. Visit snnow.ca for more details.
All right, Elliot, before we get to Ask 31, I'm not sure what your Twitter feed was like in the take the lick or not take the lick discussion from last week's podcast. But I was actually surprised at how many people would take the lick over the punch in the head.
Yeah, I got more people saying that they would not take the lick. They think licking is disgusting. But I will concede it was close. But you know what this is proof of? Licking is gross. And a lot of people are germophobes.
That is true. Learn that for sure. One person texted me and said, you guys are missing the boat here. It's actually most gross for Brad Marchand. who's licking a sweaty, bearded man. Like, that's gross for us. Sure, it's
that's true too
for Ryan Callahan, but that is a that's a gross thing for Brad Marchand. It can even address that.
Like, what if
guys.
Callahan has some of the pregame buffet still on his beard? Like, that is disgusting.
Right?
I agree with
it's
that.
Gross for everyone, for all around. All right, to some Ask 31s. This from Adam Knight. Elliot mentioned Germany is a new force in hockey. Will we see an influx of German players coming into the league? Seems like a great place to pick up an out-of-nowhere type player like a Zetterberg.
You know, normally what we've learned is when you see these things, it takes like a generation. You know, the kids start picking it up. The more and more people start playing it. You know, we've had some good players here and there, but the 96 U.S. World Cup team, those were kids who all started playing hockey because of Lake Placid, right?
Yep.
So it's probably going to take a generation or so until we see if it really has any effect. Now, I don't know much about soccer, but I understand the German team is going to be really good at the World Cup again this year, the defending champions. I just hope that doesn't wipe out the hockey excitement and victory if they steamroll to that this summer.
You know, it seems like Switzerland is popping, certainly. And
Switzerland's getting there. Like, they're really getting
there.
Listen,
man, they just had a first overall pick.
Yeah, they're getting there.
And I'm with you. You know who identified that first to me or sort of pointed at this direction for me first? When he was running the Maple Leafs, Brian Burke. I was at a Marlies game, and I was talking to Brian, and we were talking about international hockey, and he said, look, man, we're looking at Germany. We're looking at Germany. It's, you know, athletic culture, big, strong, like, this is going to be a hockey force one day. You know, their development has always been sort of held back because of the import rules. Namely, it's a door-wide-open policy, so they haven't been able to hothouse players and graduate them consistently to the NHL. But, you know, every year, Leon Draisaitl, obviously the Pied Piper here, you're getting, you know, German hockey players in the first round. Dominik Bock, someone that's, you know, played Vekwa this year in the Swedish league. You know, he'll probably be a first-rounder. If not a first-rounder, then at least a high second-rounder. So you're right. They're coming. Like, there's some really high-end German hockey players on the horizon.
You know, and there needs to be, for whatever reason, we started to see a drop in the amount of Slovaks, right? And there's a lot of concern about the Czechs.
Yeah.
Those countries need to be brought back up, and these other countries need to get there. Like, I'm looking at Denmark with Ehlers and Freddie Anderson. You know, I'd love to see it if there were more players coming out of there.
For sure.
It would give me more of a reason to drink Carlsberg.
Which, at the end of the day, is the only reason.
Is the only reason.
From Do Not Feed the Octopus, a great Twitter handle. Does the legalization of sports gambling in the United States move the NHL further down the path of more detailed injury reports like the NFL has?
You know, I think the NFL reports are BS. Like, I mean, last year when they had that miracle comeback over Atlanta in the Super Bowl, didn't Giselle Brady come out and say that, you know, Tom had a concussion and nobody did anything about it? And then all the media went through the injury reports. It said, wait a sec, he was never listed as having a concussion.
Isn't, and this is more, you know, this is your stronger suit more than mine. Isn't Brady always listed as injured all week long by the Pats?
They have done that, you're right, but they never had a concussion on there.
Okay.
Like, I know because their reporters went through it after that got done. So I always assume that the teams are going to lie about injuries, and I just can't see the hockey culture changing in that way. But what I could see them is maybe doing a better job of identifying who is doubtful or questionable or whatever. Because you reach a point in the playoffs, Jeff, where everybody's injured. Like, what did Trotz say on Wednesday morning? Backstrom, nobody's 100%. But I always assume the teams are going to go out of their way not to tell us about injuries. I think this whole betting thing is fascinating. So Boston has their year-end executive media breakdown, and Jeremy Jacobs, the owner, the chairman of the Board of Governors, says he's very excited about it. Ted Leonsis practically jumped out of his clothes. He was so excited. And I think he's going to be heavily involved. The teams are going to try their best to get a piece out of this. I don't think it's going to be easy. Now, what I really think it's going to change is, Jeff, you're going to be watching a game, and Emil's going to be going in on a breakaway, and he's going to get hauled down, and there's going to be a penalty shot, and up on your screen is going to come, is Emil going to score on this penalty shot? $50, yes or no.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you have an app on your phone that's tied into your website, and your credit card's already going to be on file, and they're going to pop up, and they're going to say, does he score on this penalty shot? And the window closes when he touches the puck. That's what this is going to do.
I'm with you on the injury reports. You know what I'd be, and I always feel for this group of people around sports gambling, I'd be very interested to hear what NHL officials think of this. Because now their calls are more scrutinized than ever. There'll be, you know, NHL refs already does it, you know, publishes the win-loss record of certain teams with certain officials.
Yep.
Already. Like, that group of people in the game are going to be under more and more scrutiny with gambling on hockey.
Maybe, but you know what, Jeff? We're the only society in the world that doesn't do this.
Oh, no, I get it. Oh, listen, I know.
Like,
I know.
Europe's
I
been
it.
Doing it for years, and you can make a really good argument. Like, if you know anything about... If any of the listeners know anything about the college basketball scandals of like the 80s and the point-fixing scandals, it was the bookies who found those out. They were like, this doesn't make sense. You know, Diana Swain years ago did an incredible story on CBC about gambling and soccer. And they were gambling on like minor league soccer in Quebec. Like, I'm like, what are these guys doing betting on these games? And I believe it was the bookies that figured out there's a problem here.
Yeah.
In tennis, when players were getting accused of tanking matches, it was the bookies that found that out. Like, I get your concern about the referees. As far as I'm concerned, every other society in the world has been dealing with this. Why can't we?
At Pardini, 36, would John Tavares be interested in signing a 2 to 3 year deal for the max? He'd hit free agency again in his late prime, but make half the money of a long-term deal in short order. Hashtag Flyers.
You know, the one thing I really believe is that he will be open to just about anything wherever he wants to go. I mean, I'll tell you this, if that was me in his shoes, yeah, I would consider that.
Do you think Tavares does, or does he just want, hey,
no,
just give me the big deal?
It depends on where he's going, right? I think it's most likely he takes the 7 or 8 year deal. But at some point in time, somebody's going to do that. They're going to say, I want 2 paydays.
Yeah.
And especially if it's a guy, like Tavares signed a 5-year extension out of his ELC. But someday someone's going to do it, and they're going to say, look, I'm signing a deal. I'm 18 years old. I do my ELC, I'm signing a 4-year deal now, and I'm going to free agency at 25. And you know what? I maybe sign another. If I'm still good, I sign another big deal when I'm 29. Somebody's going to do it. The one thing I really believe is he's handling this really smart with him and his agent, Pat Brisson. There's no leaks getting out.
Yep.
They're keeping everybody guessing. I would be astonished if he isn't going through every team he could put in the league. Nope, yep, nope, yep, no, yep. Well, if you want to go here, you know, here's one thing. Like, I threw out Pittsburgh as a team. Would they ever take a shot at him? Yeah. What if Pittsburgh said to him, 3 years, the most we can give you? Do you think it's out of the realm of possibility he'd say no?
Well, if he wants to win now.
I think the guy cares about winning.
Sure.
I'm just thinking, like, I don't know if he's going to do this now, but I do think somebody will.
Further on player movement, from Jeff, Bruins fan Twitter is ablaze with the idea of Noah Hanifin to Boston. Any truth to them wanting an upgrade on the current decor and or a potential deal with the Hurricanes?
Well, if you've heard the Hurricanes, they've said that everybody's available except Aho, and I believe there's a second player. I believe Nechash, their who's there with first rounder last year, was playing for the Czechs at the Worlds. I don't think they're training him either. But the one thing I really believe for Bruins fans, I would say, is this is. When a player like Noah Hanifin becomes available, you're looking at it.
Think Maple Leafs get in there on Hanifin?
Who wouldn't be interested?
Mm-hmm.
Like, who wouldn't be? You know Babcock would be. He wanted them to draft him 3 years ago.
Yeah. Well, he wanted one of those defensemen.
Like,
sure.
One of the things I've learned about doing this job is you could be a good team, but when a good player is available, you're interested. You know, that's kind of why I put Pittsburgh – I mentioned, like, Pittsburgh was Tavares is because, like, good players don't become available like that. if you're a team that likes Noah Hanifin, you're going to look at it and you're going to say, okay, we may not need him per se, but there might not be a guy like that available. So if we get him, what else can we do? So I guarantee you if Hanifin's available, that Boston would be looking at it. Now, I'm not saying they'd do it, but I think they'd absolutely be interested.
Okay, from OGG. Seems like a pretty vital offseason for the St. Louis Blues coming up. Rumors are they're in on Covey and Tavares and desperately need a top-line center. If Tavares isn't an option, what's the best-case scenario for Doug Armstrong to come out of the offseason as a success?
Well, you know, the one thing I believe about St. Louis, and we started off this pod talking about Rob Thomas,
yep.
And I don't necessarily think that guy's getting traded, but I believe the Blues have a lot of flexibility to do a lot of things. They've got a lot of good young players. You know, they've got things that they can move and deal if they want to do. So, like, I think it's going to become clear in the days before the draft, the weeks before the draft, and we're getting close to that in terms of who's going to do what and who's going where. But the one thing about the Blues I really believe is they have the flexibility to do a lot of things. And now with a little bit of security, I don't think Doug Armstrong is going to be afraid to do that.
Jordan Kyrou. Expectations are he's close to making the St. Louis Blues doing yeah. pro as well.
Fabry will be an interesting one because
that's what I wanted to get to. Where are they at on Robbie Fabry?
Well, it depends on his health. Like, I think when they were talking with St. Louis last year, I think Fabry's name came up.
Talking, who is St. Louis talking to?
Ottawa.
Ottawa, okay.
And I think Ottawa had some interest in him. Obviously, it didn't go anywhere. You know what? I don't have my notes in front of me, but I think we're talking Hoffman here. I think Ottawa had some interest, and I think both teams are willing to consider it. It didn't happen, but they talked about it. So it'll be interesting because when Fabry comes back, I think some teams are going to look at him.
A couple more quick from Billiam. There's some controversy about his name on Twitter. I don't know if you follow that one, Elliot. What are your feelings on a Max Pacioretty trade? What is his current value, comparable trades, potential suitors? Mixed reports out since the deadline. Just curious if there's any clarity on where the situation is heading, especially with the lottery win.
I do think that there will be attempts to trade him. I do think there will be interest. You know, I know Florida was interested last year. That makes a lot of sense. Canadians asked for Trocheck, among other things. The Panthers were not willing to do that. I do think there will be interest in him. And Montreal's probably not going to sign him, so it makes sense to deal him.
And finally, from Don, whose name was on the back of your first NHL hockey jersey?
Guy Lafleur.
See, I don't know that I had a name on the back. I was a Maple Leafs fan growing up. I don't think I ever had a jersey with a name on it. I think the first jersey with a name that I had on was probably Cam Neely, 8 for Boston.
Guy Lafleur was mine. I
Why Lafleur?
Hair.
He was your guy?
Just the hair. Like, I loved Lafleur. The flair he played with. He was so exciting. You know, I still remember the day when he was in the car accident and he almost died. I remember driving to school that day in my dad's car and hearing the news and being so crushed when I heard about it. Like, I loved Lafleur.
What's not to love? Amazing hockey player. And, you know, struggled his first two seasons as well. You know, into the NHL, there was, you know, coming out of the Quebec Ramparts of the QMJHL, expectations were to be a high scorer right away, right out of the gates. And he struggled his first couple of years. And it was, you know, Sam Pollock. Yeah, you always remember Sam Pollock's great words, never give up on a young player unless you are 100%
sure.
So if you're 99%, don't make up your mind. Isn't made up.
I can tell you one thing I'm sure of right now. While we're taping this, the Jays are on in New York, and they just showed a guy making ribs for about 30 minutes, and I'm sure I am getting really hungry.
Okay, well, let's wrap up the podcast then. Thanks to everyone who made this possible, namely Emil Delich, not just for the technical expertise today, but for hooking us up here with our friends at CJME 980 in Regina. And shout out to Ryan Moskal, who helped put all this together. So, Ryan, thank you very much. And crew here has been fantastic. I'll be back here next week to do another 31 Thoughts podcast. So thanks to everyone for listening. Hope you enjoy the Memorial Cup. Hope you enjoy the remainder of the Stanley Cup playoffs as well.
Jeff, don't forget the song. He texted it to you.
Oh, yeah, the song. Got to end every show with this from now on. The song is called Kids These Days by Shaky Graves. Take it away, folks.